Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, I got a walker at my house.
A walker?
A walker. Not like a zombie.
Oh,
no.
I was thinking
I'm talking
maybe
about a child that's on her feet, taking steps.
Oh. I thought maybe you fell and broke your hip and you had a walker in your house.
Yeah, I'm not Timu Solani.
Oh.
I need a walker.
He's doing fine.
Yeah.
The Ducks are doing fine.
Ducks are doing fine. He's not having the kind of year that, you know, he's had the last couple of years, but it doesn't look like it's affecting them too adversely based on how they've run to the top of the NHL. Who would have predicted that?
Yeah.
I would like to say that we basically did predict the Sharks last three games, although I think we felt maybe a little silly after their 4-3 win at home, although I don't know if it was as wonderful as it seems since they were up 4-1 and then it became 4-2 and then 4-3 and I was just waiting for it to get tied up at the end there.
And there's a huge scramble at the end and the Sharks basically played defense for three quarters of the third period and they seem to be content with that. Let the Kings attack and attack and attack and attack and the Sharks would just sort of sit there and take it. And I guess it worked. It almost didn't. It almost didn't work, and it certainly didn't work the next night against L.A. when the Sharks tied up the game. I thought they looked, you know, okay against L.A. the next night, and then they just... all these games blur together. It's like the same script, and same with... L.A., they came out and were down 2-0, and it was Anaheim where they were tied up the game and then gave up three goals in like 3 minutes, right?
Yeah, that
I'm trying to remember.
The second LA game was terrible. Like their overall effort was terrible, and that was the night that after that game, McClellan decided the next day was going to be a punishment practice,
mm-hmm.
get back to basics, training camp drills, et cetera, et cetera. Laying down the law, Dada's home. He pulled out his belt. You looked at my magazines, you're in trouble. You know what that's like, dude.
I'm afraid I do.
And Dada pulled the strap out and beat his boys. And they went out the next night and lost the show Dada, who's boss. Against the Ducks, you know, you're playing one of the best teams in the NHL. Again, you know, the effort, it was there in moments, I felt like, but not consistently. And then when they fell down, it was just basically over.
Mm-hmm. You give up three goals to a team that good, and guess what? You're not going to make it all the way back. I mean, they tried. I give them a little bit of credit, but the fact is you have that kind of meltdown, you basically just go into full offensive mode.
Yeah.
Just you got to make those goals back, and the Sharks wheeled and dealed for a couple periods, and they didn't make it back. And I don't, you know, I guess it's better than nothing that they didn't just go down 4-1 and then they just threw in the towel and went down 5-1, 6-1, 7-1, 8-1. But still, they still got 0 points.
So we're giving them credit for not losing 8-1? I mean, is that sort of where we are?
That is exactly where we are.
We said before we started this is not going to be another negative podcast. I don't think we can help it. I don't think we can help it, dude. Because we're tiptoeing towards the trade deadline here. And, you know, Twitter and the intranet is all abuzz today about our good buddy, Dan Boyle.
I know.
It has been officially proclaimed a rumor,
mm-hmm.
Boyle to the Rangers, which is something we talked about weeks ago as, you know, a possible fit. And it was actually brought up by John Buchgross in the offseason. And I don't even want to think about the thought of it being Boyle for Gabbert, because that could...
No.
I mean, I might stop watching if that's really... I'm serious. Like if that's really what's going to happen here, like that is... I can't imagine that that's I can't even finish this sentence. It's so bad.
But you've tried to finish that sentence 10 times. You can't finish it.
Well, I don't even want to think of it as a reality, because that just is the worst possible thing that could happen, is bringing in a guy like that at that salary with that contract. Terrible. But anyways, you know, Boyle, Clough, Murray, Hanzus, we've heard these names bandied about, dude.
Hanzus has no trade value.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd think not, but that's, you know, a name that was thrown around. You know, Pierre LeBrun wrote an article on ESPN about how the Sharks need a new coat of paint, and mentioned those names, those four players, as guys who could be out and about. I think his point is well taken, and one that you've made on this podcast before, that Doug Wilson has gone on record. Basically, his philosophy is that we will not have an Edmonton type situation here in San Jose.
Well, we see if we can get four number one overall picks in 5 years and see what they do. It's funny, actually, you know, some people know I have a podcast. I'm sure you're in the same situation where people come to you and they ask you about the Sharks. You know, I was talking to a guy at work today. What's wrong with the Sharks? What's going on with this? You know? And I mean, we've been watching hockey for a long time. I can't recall ever feeling this much at a loss. I have a terrible time explaining, how is this team exactly that different than the team last year? They seem to be so much worse. And I honestly, I don't understand anything that's going on in the NHL this season. We talked about the Ducks a second ago. Why are the Ducks leading the NHL in points? They have the same team too. They're good and the Sharks aren't. The Rangers, who... Did I stupidly pick them number one overall in our draft?
I
think I did. I think I picked the Rangers number one overall. I have to look at my notes, but
you didn't. I have the Rangers.
Oh, you have the Rangers?
I stupidly took them.
Oh, who did I take number one overall?
Pittsburgh.
Oh, good.
You're okay, dude.
I was smart for once.
You're okay.
See,
I'm the dumb shit that has the Rangers.
See, I'm just picking. I said, there's a dumb pick out there. Who must have made it? It must have been me. Okay.
Well, you did take Vancouver fourth.
Yes, I did.
That's a bad pick.
Okay. Agreed.
I think you took the Flyers.
I mean,
too.
I have the Flyers. I have no idea what's going on this season. Like, I honestly feel like I am just like adrift in the sea of uncertainty with the NHL. It's like nothing is making sense. I mean, there's some stuff that we sort of picked. We've seen Detroit slide a little. We've seen Chicago be good. We've seen some of these things. You know, Pittsburgh obviously is doing very well. But there's so many things that are happening in the NHL that I just cannot explain. I'm just having a terrible time.
I heard an interview with Drew Remenda today on KMBR. He does a weekly show on KMBR that I thought he put it in a little bit of perspective, dude. Mm. This is what he said. He said, this team is older and slower, and they refuse to accept it, and that McClellan is trying to get them to change their game plan to play more of a grinded out style. Mm-hmm. And when they choose to do it, he said, this is not the same team that's going to go up and down the ice and beat you with their speed. And that some of the guys, he did not name anyone, but I'll name them, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau and Havlat, and who else is getting a little bit up there in age that, you know, doesn't have the same speed that they used to. They're not fully committing to this change in style. And so he said the way they want the Sharks to play is not pretty.
Right.
But when it's done right, we've seen it around the league work.
Yes. Yes, and that's for sure. With lesser talent.
The team, according to Drew, and they had to pry it out of him, Mr. Homer, is not buying into it. Ray Ratto got him to admit it. The team does not fully commit to this idea of changing styles. I felt like that made sense to me.
Yes.
You know, this team...
That makes a lot of sense.
Is not... They don't want to play that way. They're not good enough to play the other way anymore against younger teams. And they're not fully committing to this change in philosophy. So now here we are.
Here we are.
And I think their start may have been the worst thing that could have happened to this team, because they probably believed after running up the score on everybody and it was essentially the preseason, that we can still play this way.
Right.
The fountain of youth is here. Hello, Don Quixote, you know?
Why are we talking about donkeys? You said Don Quixote? Who's that?
Dude.
Okay, sorry. Dude, did I derail your train of thought? I want to go back to Boyle for a second.
Okay.
Because it's a, you know, I got a picture on the wall right here of Dan Boyle signing.
You have several.
To dudes on hockey. And I got to tell you, I have a very difficult time separating the idea of trading Boyle from what is good for the Sharks, because I'm going to be really mad at the Sharks if they trade Dan Boyle. I almost don't care, especially now, especially because of what Kevin Kurz came out and wrote today with Boyle saying, I don't want to go anywhere. This is where I want to be. I don't want to move. And so, you know, the only way I was able to justify to myself previously was for me to think, okay, you know, Boyle's had enough here. He sees the trajectory this team is going. He's only got a few years left in the league, so he probably wants to go reunite with Torts, get on a team with some good young players, and make a run at the Cup probably next year. But it seems like he doesn't want to do that. So to see maybe one of my favorite players, certainly ever on the Sharks, get traded away, I'm going to not be okay with that, regardless of what happens, and regardless of whether it's good for the Sharks or not. Like, I cannot separate that.
Trading Dan Boyle does not make the Sharks a better team this year. It would be something that would make the Sharks a better team next year. And they, if they're going to do a move like that, it's got to be for an outstanding return. Outstanding. And I went and looked to see what some comparables would be. Was that comparables?
Yeah.
Comparables?
Some people say comparables.
I went to see what some equal stuff would be, dude.
Good. Yes.
And the best comparison I could come up with was the trade we made for Dan Boyle. Because these types of players don't get traded very often with term on their contracts. The other deal that I looked at that was comparable was the trade we made for Brent Burns. All right. Now, unfortunately,
true.
Both those players, when the trades were made, were younger than this player, Dan Boyle, who's 36, right? Or 37. So it might be a little different. But the return for all of those players were a young NHL player who's a proven NHL player. Matt Carl or Setoguchi.
Yes.
Okay? Both players have had question marks, but they were legitimate NHL players. The Sharks' top prospect, Wishart, Coyle, and a first. If we don't get something like that, then they shouldn't do it. Like, if they're going to do it for a first and a third, that's just...
It's not enough.
That's a waste. It's not worth it. Really, nothing's going to change around here. If this is going to be the way we're going to play with this roster, nothing's going to change as long as Marlow and Thornton are still here. I don't think anything's going to change, dude.
Right. Yeah.
And those are the guys that you can't move. If we really wanted to play this way and try and salvage the season, both of those guys need to go, in my opinion.
Or they need to completely buy in, which apparently
they're
not
going to. It just, you hear...
I can't say that for sure, and neither can you.
I can say this. After the Ducks game, when they just got chided the day before, Jumbo's response, that's sports. That's sports.
Yeah.
That's his response to the media. And that's his, if that's his attitude. Now, we don't know what his attitude behind the closed doors is.
No.
But based on what we see of Joe, he's not going to be super fiery. He's just... Hey, oops, guys, that's sports. Hey, anyone want to go to Spaghetti Factory? Like, I feel like that's sort of like what's going on. Like,
yeah.
We're still in it, boys. You know, we're the 8 seed right now. We just got to make the playoffs. Anything can happen. You know, come on. Malt's on me, boys.
Did you see this thing on the blog? Someone posted something about Marty McSorley saying something about this team.
I remember someone putting something about that
a while
ago.
So Tom put a comment on the blog and he said, McSorley is very critical of Doug Wilson, essentially thinks the culture needs to change, not necessarily the players, says he likes T-Mac. McSorley says the team calls him the senator, says DW has been way too soft on the players and makes things too easy for them, seems to think that in the case of Klo, we'll be a much better player on a team that holds him accountable to be his best every night. So I guess you have to consider the source, because obviously we've, you know, the story of Marty McSorley is he just left in the middle of the night one night, essentially.
Right.
He grabbed his pillow and his big boy slippers and he just walked out.
Let's look at that. What was written here by Tom. Okay. Chloe has done two of the dumbest things that I can remember seeing a Sharks player do, other than Scott Parker climbing the glass.
That wasn't dumb. That was cool.
Ryan Chloe played a puck from the bench.
Yeah.
And there was no discipline from the team. They almost reacted like it never happened. And there was no discipline for that player who could have cost them the game, could have got suspended.
Yeah.
You know, and then he left the bench and did get suspended for trying to start a fight on a line change, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. So, and really the you know, from what we know, he's just, oh, his punishment is he was playing on the third line. I mean, is that his punishment? Still getting power play time. He hasn't scored a goal all year. So, it's hard to know, dude. I guess I just have to go off of what I see, which is a team that's not fully committed to what Drew's saying, which is this change in style, which is what Doug Wilson said basically they were going to do, and the team isn't really up for doing it. So they don't have the right players to... You see these teams that play this way, dude, they don't have stars on those teams. They have anonymous guys.
Right.
Nashville, Phoenix.
Yep. Dallas.
It doesn't work. The Columbus team that was under Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
Even St. Louis, in some respects, you know, they don't have a big star on that team. They really don't. I mean, Backes is an all-star, but
yeah,
and an Olympian, but he's not in the same, you know, breath as the Sedins. Oh, let's get to them in a minute. But, or Jumbo or someone like that.
Right. No, so, I agree.
So is this just destined to fail with this roster?
I have no idea, because I don't think it's destined to fail, because you see coaches come in and they turn these teams around. I mean, Phoenix was having a problem before Tippett came in. They figured it out, you know.
So
St. Louis was having a problem before Hitchcock came in, figured it out.
But the fact that I said after the Anaheim loss, I said if he survives tomorrow, they're not going to fire him. And they didn't fire him.
Right.
He's still, as we're recording right now, the Sharks are losing 2-1 in Edmonton. And
frankly, I don't think there's any difference if we're recording now versus after the game, because I feel like we know what's going
to
happen.
Well, the fact is that McClellan is still behind the bench, which means that, to me, Doug Wilson has 100% support in McClellan for the rest of this year,
mm-hmm.
at least. There's not going to be a coaching change. So,
yeah.
What do you do? Do you just keep going and see what happens, or do you make some sort of major in-season move?
I think you trade everything that's not nailed down, essentially, other than Dan Boyle. I don't want to see him go.
But what does that mean, dude? Like, who are you talking about?
Chloe, Murray, all those guys that we just talked about. Havlat.
Unrestricted guys. Guys who are going to be gone. You just get anything you can.
Get anything you can for them. You get anything you can for those guys. Havlat.
No one's going to take Havlat.
If there's some salary coming the other way, you might get something, I think.
What, this guy can't even get on the ice.
I know.
And when he's out there, he's an enigma. That's why the thought of even having Gabrick and Havlat on the team at the same time, the Brittle brothers, dude. Oh, man.
I got to tell you, you know, we've certainly talked about how Doug Wilson, you know, we've both been fans of Doug Wilson in the past, and we both admitted that he's made some deals that really have been awful. The Jamie McGinn trade being at the top of the list. And yet we still sort of defend him. Even as I'm sitting here, I still think Doug Wilson is a decent GM. He makes mistakes, but other GMs make mistakes too. And I'm not uncomfortable about him continuing to lead the team in terms of personnel. However, that being said, if we do end up with Marian Gaborik, all that equity is gone for me. I will be calling for his head, because that is an unbelievably stupid idea. I can't imagine him going out and getting a player like that with the team in the situation that it's in. With Havlat, given the fact that we had Heatley, we had a large contract to dump, we wanted to get a player with more speed, better 5-on-5, it seemed to make sense to get a player like Havlat. And it was addition by subtraction by getting rid of Heatley, okay, at the time. However, There is no addition of any type if we go and get Marian Gaborik. It's just
You're adding another type of player who's exactly the kind of player that's up the problem. Like, he doesn't want to play that way for Torts. He's going to want to play that way here.
Right. So we're going to install him on a grunge system. Dude,
I refuse to accept that as even a possibility. So let's play GM for a moment before we move on. Because I've got another reason why you can't trade Dan Boyle. I've got another reason. But if you did to the Rangers, what is an acceptable return for you? Like, what would be okay?
You got to see a young forward coming back. We talked about Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider has been down to the minors, although they brought him back up like almost immediately. You know, Chris Kreider is not a slam dunk, right? He's not even as established as Setoguchi was when we traded him for Burns. So,
they even have that to offer? I don't even know. I mean, I've seen
Carl
Hagelin's name thrown around. I don't think that's enough. Like, I don't know if that's
Carl Hagelin in a first.
I'd be listening. I got to look at his stats, but I don't think that that's enough. Let's look, dude. If it's not one of their four young defensemen.
But do we really need defensemen? Yes, we do.
Yeah. This is the other point. Is Brent Burns not a defenseman anymore? Like, what's going on? Because everyone seems so excited about this. I'm not excited about it at all. I think it's awful. Like, I'm mad. It'd be like if all of a sudden Colin Kaepernick is playing cornerback. Like,
right.
Like, that's not, what are we celebrating? Like, this guy, we traded our best prospect, Setoguchi, and a first for a guy who can't even play defense anymore. Like, he's not good enough or healthy enough to play D. And he's playing up front. Oh, his forecheck is so strong. He doesn't hit anybody. He skates around. Like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
I'm not as adamant about it as you are. I just think that, like a lot of other things, like you see with rookies and other players, it's going to wear off. If he turns into a point per game player or close to it as a forward for 60 games, then I'll start believing that Brent Burns is a legitimate long-term idea at forward. I play defense. You put me at offense, I'm going to be excited about it. It's a new position. I'm going to be running around the ice. I'm not really sure what I'm doing, but it's going to be fun to be around the net, you know, this kind of thing. Maybe I put up a few points in my first few games, but you know what? People figure them out. Like, people are going to figure it all out. The novelty is going to wear off, and I think what's probably going to happen is he's going to regress into a guy who is being Patrick Marleau, who's playing the point on the power play. Duh, play the point on the power play as a defenseman. You know what I mean? It's like, this is what he's better at. He should be a defenseman probably. I could be wrong. Maybe he's going to be a point per game player as a forward, but I friggin' doubt it.
But if you trade Boyle and Burns is playing forward, so now we're going to do what? Like, now you're down two D-men. Your two best defensemen are not playing for the team anymore.
Right. So Matt Irwin's your number one now?
And Matt Irwin's been good.
He's been
really good.
Really, really
so
good.
So your D now is Irwin, Stewart, Vlasic, Murray,
Braun. And Demers.
That is bottom third of the NHL now.
Right.
Bottom third in D. If you're going to trade Boyle to the Rangers, the name Michael Delzato better be coming back the other way.
Right.
It better be Delzato or McDonough. It won't be McDonough.
It won't be McDonough.
All right.
No chance.
But Delzato's fourth out of those guys. He's the four.
Right. He's the number four.
You get him back or this deal stinks. If they don't get him back, it stinks.
I'd almost rather them try and get a young forward, because thinking of Worcester, I mean, we have Senna Akalatse and not much else in Worcester right now in terms of guys who can legitimately, we could imagine playing at the NHL level.
Then the Rangers aren't the right dance partner, because I mean, Hagelin has 17 points. Like, I mean,
it's not bad.
It's not bad.
He's young, too.
I know. It's not bad, but it's not like, you know.
That's pretty good, dude. I'm pretty happy. I'd be pretty happy with that. What was he, 23? 22?
I, is that enough, dude? I mean, like, I just don't know if that's enough. Like, last year he had 38 points
in how many
64 games.
Yeah.
So you're going to get back a 45-point forward for an all-star defenseman?
He's 24. I don't know.
And you're talking yourself into something you'll regret.
Maybe I am. Because I just want something to change. It's just, I'm with you. It's like, this is getting excruciating now to see this team like not really have a clue what's going on. And if I got to watch another year of this crap with Thornton and Marlowe leading the charge in a different direction than the coaching staff, it's going to be excruciating. It's going to be awful. I can't... I mean, it's going to be extremely difficult. I mean, we're going to be earning our stripes as fans. You know, they say, you know, fans made in the hard times, and we're going to be seeing them next year if this is the same team that we're throwing out next year. Because unless there's a major attitude change at the top of the lineup, we're going to see more and more and more and more of the same.
It's now 3-1 Oilers, by the way.
Shocking.
With 13 minutes left.
So shocking.
Yeah.
Way to go for the positive podcast, dude.
Well, it was inevitable, dude.
Is it time for the book report?
It's sort of inevitable.
What else you got? You got anything else?
I don't know. I mean, like, the other thing that I thought that's possible is we've seen this happen in the last couple seasons where there have been teams that have made hockey trades. Like, they've been struggling and they make a hockey trade. Mm-hmm. Like the example, Colorado sending Stewart and Shattenkirk to St. Louis for Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. Buffalo doing Ott for Derek Roy. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. There's another example. Go for Neil and Niskanen. All right. Uh-huh. Havlat for Heat. Oops. That's not a great one.
But wait, who did Phoenix get from the Blue Jackets? They got
Vermette for like Kleslar.
But that worked out really well for Phoenix.
Right. They did, you know, Mathot for Foligno. You know, there have been good hockey trades out there where there have been players exchanged. Carter for Jack Johnson. Mm-hmm. All right. And there was a pick involved in there too. But that's Mike Richards for Simmons and Shen. You know?
Yeah.
So can the Sharks find another team out there? Like, I'm off the top of my head, Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Right? Buffalo. Buffalo is in, boy, they're in trouble. You know? Washington. You know? You look at those teams and you go, do we have something that they need or want? And in exchange, we get something back. You know? Something that needs a different, you know, a different look. You know, I don't even know what the idea is. I don't even have a thought or something to pitch. I'm just saying, is there a hockey trade out there? Not a dump, but like a hockey trade. Like you're trading pieces and parts that are struggling on each other's teams to try and jumpstart each other.
Didn't they trade Brooks Like to Colorado for something? No, it wasn't Brooks Like. It was somebody else. They traded like their second line center to Colorado. Washington did. I'm trying to remember who that was. I thought it was Brooks Like. But anyway, it was a trade like that, right? And it's just, but he's a good. Who was it? Oh, forget it. Anyway, but it was one of those things where like good player, just struggling on Washington and then came over the other side and did better, you know?
Right.
And so that's kind of what we need, I guess. But the thing is, if we do get good players back, then you really think that's going to make the Sharks into what?
Well, I think it's just something different. I mean, mm-hmm. like you're looking to shake up the core a little bit. You know, I mean, I guess I'm thinking of something like Pavelski for, you know, Pominville, you know, or Vonick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a major thing, like something major, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying Pavs is the problem. The problem is the two guys who are the problem
aren't going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because if you could take Jumbo and Marlowe off this team and replace them with Iginla and Backes, doesn't the identity of this team change completely?
Oh, yeah.
Completely.
Not even somebody as good as Backes. You know, it'd be like somebody like Iginla and like, you know, bring back Craig Conroy. I mean, seriously.
But someone who you just... you just buy in to what's going on.
Right.
Like you, this is where, God, I wish we had Shane Doan.
I know.
Like, I just think it changes. It just changes everything. I'm pissed, dude. I'm so upset.
It's
disappointing. I mean, Minnesota's on a roll. We're going to Minnesota on Saturday. We're going to get our ass kicked.
I know.
Gonna get killed in Minnesota.
I know. And there's three games I'm going to next week. And that,
we're slowly slipping into despair.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're going to do. A part of me thinks they're going to do nothing and just let the ship, you know, just like you're seeing someone drown and you don't jump in and save them.
Yeah. It's just sort of drifting away.
It's like some self-loathing.
No. What else we got, dude? Anything?
No, I got nothing.
Anything good?
Other than some antidepressants and a glass of scotch, I got nothing.
Oh, scotchy
nothing,
scotch.
Nothing.
Yum, yum, yummy scotch.
Hey, the Bulls made the playoffs.
Yeah. I might go see playoff games.
And just in time, they called up their best player to Worcester.
I know.
Peter Simic. Oops. Dude, how mad is is Pat Curcio?
I know.
He's like, I'm so excited for you. God damn it.
I know. Oh.
Damn you, Sharks.
No. Didn't Dean Ouellette get lent to the Hamilton or something?
They traded him.
Oh, okay. I mean,
they traded him, so.
Oh, maybe it was on the Twitter feed just because he was an ex-player. I watched the Bulls' Twitter feed, obviously.
Well, do you have anything you want to share?
Well, dude, I mean, I was going to talk about, like, Jamie McLennan's book and Derek Sanderson's book because I've read them, but I don't know how long I want to go into it. But let me give you the brass tacks. Jamie McLennan, I think the way I put it to you earlier was, the Jamie McLennan book is the Wonder Bread of books. Like, you read it and it's basically just this collection of anecdotes. I mean, and you see other books like this. I've read other hockey books like this, where basically he gets together and gets interviewed by the guy who ghost writes the book, and Jamie McLennan gives him a bunch of anecdotes, mostly not like risque or insightful at all, just sort of like shenanigans that happened while he was on the team. Hey, look, we all got drunk and fell down a manhole or whatever it is. And then they turn that into a book. And it's just like, I read it and I'm like reading these anecdotes and it's just like, oh yeah, you're reading about a guy and his experience in the NHL. And you're like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then you get to the end, you go, wait a minute. That just sucked as a book. It's not any good. I mean, I'm sure Jamie McLennan is a, you know, charismatic person, and I know he's on TV and all these kinds of things, but that book was like, it wasn't that interesting. It wasn't that insightful. He didn't really talk about, like, you know, what do you really go through by being a backup? He just said, yo, I had best seat in the house. You know, and I'm like, okay. But on the other hand, the Derek Sanderson book is the exact opposite. The Derek Sanderson book rules. It is great. I haven't finished it yet. And he goes into all that stuff. You know, he was a player on the Bruins in the late 60s, early 70s, played with Bobby Orr. And then his whole life just took this terrible turn. He got mixed up in drugs and alcohol and was broke and living on the street and the whole thing. And he, like, you know, maybe it's ghostwritten. Probably is, right? Or, you know, Derek Sanderson with whoever else. But, you know, he really digs into that stuff. Like, you hear about his life. There's a thread running through the book. It's not just like, oh, and then I went out to a bar and I got really drunk and there were some hot chicks. And, like, I'm like, hey, I'm Derek Sanderson. And he's like, oh, sweet. And then the next day I went to the rink. And then the next day I won the Stanley Cup. The end. You know? And it's like, geez, you know, this is exactly what a hockey book should be like, is this Derek Sanderson book. So you should read that one. If you're thinking about buying a hockey book, buy the Derek Sanderson book and not the Jamie McLennan book, even though the names that you'll hear in the Jamie McLennan book are much more recognizable because, you know, he stopped playing in, what, 2008. So he's got stories about, you know, lots of players that you've heard of, you know, Gretzky and all these guys. And it's like, but at the end of the day, it's just, which ones, you read Barry Melrose's book, right? Uh-huh. I haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah, that sounds more like the McLennan book, but I like the Melrose book because it was entertaining. He talks about his career as a player. He gets into his, you know, coaching stints in the AHL, the, you know, junior hockey, his transition into, you know, assistant coaching in Detroit, being offered the LA job, how he was basically waiting for the Detroit job. I thought there were some really good hockey stories there.
Okay. You know,
his relationship with Gretzky, his dynamic with that whole team.
Do you talk at all about the whole mess in Tampa?
A little bit. A little bit.
Not much.
Not as much as I would have liked to have heard everything about it. I mean, he basically said that
the owners didn't know what they were doing.
No, well, that he said the players and the owners had a relationship that went above him, and that they were like buddy buddies with the players, and that the players, he couldn't hold them accountable at all, and that after 15 games, you know, he could basically, he said he didn't fight it. He knew it was the right thing. That
right.
They just, you know, he while he was a player's coach, I think that he also had like a, you know, a lot of discipline that he put into his teams, and they weren't buying any of it because there was nothing, you know, to hold them accountable. So
right. They didn't actually have
it
to
seemed
do
like
anything.
A good game. Dude, Sharks have tied it up 3-3. So
what?
Maybe we should talk some more trash. A goal by Wingles, a goal by Couture. And here we are, 7 minutes left, 3-3.
Dude, let's end the podcast and go watch the end of the game.
Dude, we got to keep talking. They're going to lose.
No, dude, we're going to go watch the end of the game. Let's get out of here.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.